Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. ESG, or Environmental, Social, Governance, promises to help the bottom line and the planet at the same time. Is it too good to be true? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of an episode digging into that very question.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. Professional sports are back. Well, kind of. Major League Baseball began a shortened 60-game schedule last week, and the NBA tipped off a restart to its season last night in Orlando.
4-second difference. LeBron on the fly. Got his own miss and puts it up and in.
Well, you can hear the excitement, but what you won't hear this year are fans as the nation remains caught in the throes of the coronavirus pandemic. Professional sports leagues are trying to get back on their feet. This hour on Point, the return of sports during the pandemic. I'd like to start this hour from Orlando with Ben Golliver. He is an NBA reporter at the Washington Post. Welcome to On Point. Great to have you, Ben.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So the NBA had a star-studded opening night last night in this very unusual 2020 season. Tell us about it.
Well, after months and months of trying to get back onto the court, they really had a dream night. Now, you have to understand there were extended negotiations about trying to bring the sport back between the league and its players. There were major concerns about not being distractions from a social justice standpoint, not distracting from the protests that arose after George Floyd's murder, and also major questions about what would the basketball look like after these guys were essentially in isolation for 4 months and not able to train and play together. What we wound up getting last night was, like I said, a dream. You had a game winner from LeBron James, the biggest star of the sport. You had Rudy Gobert, who was actually patient zero of the coronavirus here for American sports, the first player whose positive test wound up leading to the NBA shutdown in March. He came back and scored the first points of the restart in very symbolic fashion, and he wound up having the game-winning free throws for the Utah Jazz as well. So you add all that together with what I thought was a fairly profound national anthem protest where players locked arms, took a knee during the national anthem before both games. The coaches and referees joined them as well. You put all that together, and I think the NBA has got to be very happy with the planning and the fact they were able to execute this with inside a bubble down here at Disney World.
Well, we'll talk about the bubble in a moment. Let's get to the Black Lives Matter first, because it's been a big theme within the bubble and around the league. Here's LeBron James addressing the media following the Lakers' victory over the Clippers last night. He spoke about the inspiration that former NFL quarterback Colin Kaepernick set by kneeling during the national anthem as a response to racial injustice and police brutality.
Our people, in the black community did listen, and we just thank him for sacrificing, everything that he did to put us in a position today, even years later, to be able to have that moment like we had tonight.
Talk more about that, Ben Golliver, the Black Lives Matter movement, which has been a big theme this year, of course, in the NBA.
Well, it's a fascinating dynamic for the NBA because they are always painted and they seek to be painted as the progressive league. But on this issue of protesting during the national anthem, the NBA players really have not walked in the footsteps of Colin Kaepernick at all since he first started protesting police brutality in 2016. The NBA has had a rule that says you have to stand at attention during the national anthem. That rule dates back to the 1980s. And the players had followed that rule throughout the last three or four seasons. I think a lot changed this summer for a lot of people. You saw a number of NBA players come out very strongly leading protests against police brutality after George Floyd's murder. And I think that they eventually decided, hey, we want to make a unified statement. If more than 300 players have to go down to Disney World and live for up to 3 months without real access to the outside world, they want to make sure that they're sending the right message about where their hearts are at this point. And so for LeBron James, I think he was the one who gave Kaepernick credit. And I think he actually felt a little bit like maybe they were late to the party. But, better late than never. Certainly, it was a powerful moment. And it wasn't just about one player in Kaepernick who wound up being ostracized by the league. I mean, this was a league production as well. There were video montages that went along with the kneeling demonstration. As I mentioned, everyone knelt together to try to send a unified message. And we've been hearing from players all week long, whether advocating for the arrest of the police officers in the Breonna Taylor case, whether saluting Representative John Lewis. A number of different players have used this Orlando bubble as an opportunity to get their own political messages out. And I expect that to continue in part because they're going to be playing through October, right up in the run up to the presidential election.
Well, talk to us about the NBA bubble now, because it seemed like a ridiculous concept when it was introduced a few months ago, this notion of bringing hundreds of NBA players to the same place and all but shutting them off from the rest of the world for almost 3 months. You've been inside the bubble now for a couple of weeks. Tell us about it. What's it like in there?
Well, I would just say it wasn't a ridiculous concept, but it did feel a little bit too good to be true, right?
For some, it was ridiculous.
Right. Well, they had no choice, though, because as we're seeing with baseball and football, you can't fly around the country, right? I mean, you're not able to do your typical travel schedule. And certainly, if you're exposing players to the outside world on a regular basis, some of them are going to test positive. And if they have to play a full contact sport indoors, they're going to spread it with each other. So it winds up being kind of fantastical, this notion that you could create like a biosphere or just a restricted environment for everyone to live in.
Right.
But they approached this in a very deliberate manner. They wanted to have as many teams as they could. The main goal, of course, is trying to increase television revenue, to have as much product to put on television for ESPN and TNT as possible. And I think they started there and worked backwards. They invited 22 teams, more than 300 players. Since everybody's come down to Florida and been turned loose within this bubble, and the players are living at three separate Disney World hotels, the media members like myself are living in another one so that we don't have direct access to the players. But since everyone's been down here, there hasn't been a single person test positive who has had full access to the bubble. And again, you just compare the numbers. You know, baseball is, I think there were 17 or 18 positive tests on one team, and they just recently restarted play, and other teams have had issues as well. So I think the numbers here are providing very definitive evidence that if you do want to play full contact sports and you want to be able to crown a champion like the NBA does, which takes months to unfold, you have to find ways to isolate and to thoroughly and rigorously test. And everybody, including myself down here in the bubble, gets tested for coronavirus every single morning. We report our symptoms if we have any. We also provide our temperature and a pulse ox reading to doctors through an app every single morning so that they can kind of control this thing. I'd also note, when I was watching the game last night, the Lakers game, my mask happened to slip down below my nose, and I got a text message from NBA PR saying, one of our security officers saw your mask. Can you please pull it up?
Wow.
So that's the level of detail they've got going on down here. And to me, it's working so far.
Well, they must feel good. The league must feel good about no players testing positive for coronavirus. You mentioned testing and temperature readings and this very strict protocol. The NBA has 100-plus pages of protocol for inside the bubble. Just give us a slice of how strict it is and how players feel about this setup.
Well, it's very strict. I mean, you can't leave. If you want to come back, like if you have a family emergency, for example, you could leave and then come back. But if you come back, you have to go through a quarantine period of at least 4 days or up to 10 days. You're wearing masks at all times around the campus. When the players are at the gym, they're sitting socially distanced on the bench. They are not using the typical Gatorade jugs. Everyone has individual water. In general, they're being encouraged to, you know, pursue individual activities as much as possible. So everybody latched onto this idea that doubles ping pong was banned because people would be in too close a proximity to do that. Mm. There have been a lot of outside activities players have been allowed to do, whether it's fishing or riding bikes. They've been encouraged to do that, as well as golf. But, you know, it's very strict. These guys have to shower back at their hotel rooms after games. So imagine, you know, 3 hours of exertion at the highest level of professional sports, and you have to ride a 15-minute bus back to your hotel room so you can shower by yourself. Very disorienting experience for NBA players, and a complete break with their norms. And, you know, that's sort of what the lay of the land is here. They've set this up so there's kind of a bubble within the bubble. I like to compare it, you know, the players are sort of the protons, and the media members and the league staffers and everybody else are kind of the electrons. We're allowed to kind of circle around outside of them, but we're really not supposed to come into direct contact with them. So, for example, our media pen has a perimeter of 0.8 miles, right? And I cannot walk over to the player's hotel. Security guards would stop me. Now, they're not armed, but they have walkie-talkies, and certainly they're checking our credentials to make sure that we're staying in the right places that we're supposed to be. So there's a very surreal experience. There's no question about it. I've never lived anything like this, but the whole thing is designed to keep the players as isolated as possible from everybody else, and that includes the media members and even some league staffers. For example, NBA Commissioner Adam Silver flew down from New York to watch opening night. He was not allowed access to the court. He could not talk to the players or shake hands with the coaches or do anything like that because he had not gone through the full quarantine period. So he actually watched the game from the upper decks of the stands.
Wow. Well, it is intense, and several NBA players, including some big names, opted out of this arrangement, didn't they, before their teams left for the bubble, Ben?
Oh, absolutely. There was concerns all the way around. I mean, some players really felt deeply that it could distract from the social justice protests. This idea of if we get back to sports, people are going to forget about the issues that are facing the Black community. There were people who had family members who were high risk, who just didn't feel like they could come down here in good conscience. You also had players who were maybe dealing with unrelated injuries or just sort of 50-50, you know, am I ready to play? Am I not? And given the stakes of the coronavirus, you know, the life and death stakes, I think that helped, you know, some people make up their mind. One fascinating case was Rudy Gobert, and I wrote about him this week. He was the first player to test positive in the shutdown professional sports. Like, basically, the NBA, suspended its season immediately after his positive test. Rudy Gobert is here and playing and excited to be playing, but he has still not recovered his full sense of smell after more than 4 months. So he's still dealing with the impact of the coronavirus on a day-to-day experience. He actually played quite well last night, and I know it was a nice full circle moment for him and for the league too, but it's still just a reminder of how this virus can touch, you know, basically anyone. And it's a reminder of the need for vigilance here within the bubble. I think that there's a real sensation among people living here of, you know, kind of calm and comfort at this point because no one has tested positive, but no one wants to get too comfortable. They don't want that sense of security to turn into a false sense of security where people stop following the protocols as strictly as they have been so far.
About a minute left here, Ben. The season will be a full production overseen by Disney, which owns ESPN and ABC. They'll be broadcasting many of the games. The courts look like they're made for TV. They're even piping in crowd noise. How do you feel about that?
Well, the Disney stuff is everywhere. I'm wearing a Magic Band with Mickey Mouse logo and an NBA logo on my wrist. I can't take it off or I wouldn't be able to get back into my hotel room. I showed up back in my room yesterday and there's a little card that says, here, have 3 months of Disney Plus. We know you're bored here, you know, stuck in Disney World. Why don't you watch our streaming service? When you're going to the arena, you know, the Disney signs are everywhere. The Disney campus down here is massive. Now, personally, I'm not a huge fan of Disney. I haven't watched a lot of the cartoon movies, so I think a lot of it goes over my head. But some of my friends are saying, oh, you're the happiest place on earth. I would give anything to be able to spend, you know, 3 months at Disney World. That's not quite my mentality. But I think ultimately the biggest question is just a conflict of interest. ESPN is a Disney product and they're a television provider here. They're trying to weigh a lot of concerns.
Electron Ben circling around the Proton players down there in the bubble. Ben Golliver, NBA reporter for The Washington Post. Thank you, Ben.
Oh, my pleasure.
We'll be back talking about professional sports during the pandemic. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. A recent episode featured a debate about ESG, or environmental social governance.
This sounds like more work than just putting your money into a social impact fund.
It's a lot more work.
Yeah.
Anybody who thinks there's an easy solution here is either engaged in puffery, greenwash, or deceiving themselves.
Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the episode.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're discussing the comeback of professional sports during the pandemic. And with me from New York City, Jason Gay, sports columnist at The Wall Street Journal. Jason, welcome to On Point. Nice to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Also joining us from Needham, Massachusetts, Bill Littlefield, veteran sports commentator and the former longtime host of the WBUR and NPR program Only a Game. Welcome to On Point. Nice to have you, Bill.
Thank you, Jane. I appreciate the opportunity. And of course, Jason and I have something in common. Sometimes each of us hosted Only a Game.
Oh, right. You guys go way back. Well, nice to have you both. Jason, I'll start with you. What'd you think of opening night for the NBA last night in this very unusual season?
I mean, I was shocked at how normal it felt almost immediately. I had very, you know, perplexed opinions watching the sort of early preseason games that were happening in the bubble. But last night, clearly they had saved some things for that big opening night matchup. And it felt, I don't want to say natural, because there's just so many wrinkles in it, which are quite a bit different than what we were accustomed to. But it certainly felt closer to the real thing than I anticipated.
Well, teams arrived in the NBA bubble on July 7th, Bill. The season started July 30th. If this bubble model works and they make it to the playoff games, even the NBA finals, and that last group of players, coaches, and staff will have been there for about 3 months. I mean, it's incredible that they're trying this, and so far it's working, but I guess it only takes one person getting infected and the bubble bursts.
Would probably be it. That, of course, is the flip side of having everybody quarantined together. But I also had a very perverse thought about this, which is, what's the chance that some number of players, after they've been down there for a while, start thinking, boy, I really hope we don't get as far as the finals. I'm sick of being down here. I wouldn't mind going home.
So what's the significance, Bill? You've covered sports for decades. You may love sports more than anyone I know. In a crisis moment like this, what's the significance of sports to us individually and to society as a whole?
I think that's probably a question that everybody has to answer for him or herself. I'm uncomfortable with what we're seeing now myself, because it feels to me as if the major excuse or impulse for getting pro sports back is, we want people to think that things are getting back to normal, and we want them to be able to do the things and have the diversions and the entertainment options that they have under normal circumstances. And I don't think it's a good idea for people to begin thinking about normal circumstances. I think we've got a long way to go with this pandemic. And I've seen an awful lot of evidence that many people aren't taking it as seriously as they should. And it seems to me that, some of these alleged diversions, albeit corporate underwritten by big corporations like Disney, are likely to encourage people to think, oh, yeah, okay, cool, basketball game on tonight, baseball game on tomorrow, life is going on pretty much as usual, and it isn't. And I think people need to focus on the fact that we need a national policy to address the pandemic, which has been sadly lacking under the Trump administration. We don't need diversions. We need real focus on something that's threatening great large numbers of people.
So Jason Gay will go beyond basketball this hour to the National Football League, Major League Baseball, soccer, golf, college football. I'm curious how you see this moment for professional sports.
Well, I think that, and thank you for including college football with professional sports, because it really is that.
It certainly is.
But I think Bill is exactly right that there is a somewhat of a conflict in the way that the nation is confronting what seems to be a still very difficult situation and the return to normalcy. However, I would say that the main reason, or basically the only reason that matters, that for all of these organizations to return is money. This is business, period. That's the beginning and the end of the story. None of these leagues are coming back for some sort of broad social purpose here. They are coming back because if they don't come back, they stand to lose not just hundreds of millions, but billions of dollars potentially. And it has the, presents all kinds of challenges for them long term. So that's what's driving all of this. So there's that conflict as well. And I do feel that there is some hazard, as Bill says, of, does this represent too much of a return to normal? Do people sort of let their guard down? But on the flip side of it, I did, watching the games last night, you have the action on the floor, and then you see the assistant coaches in the background, and you see actually the commissioner of the NBA, Adam Silver, who Ben mentioned wasn't even allowed to interact with the players.
Right.
And then you see all the other players from the other teams who are watching the games, and they're all in masks and they're all socially distant. And it's actually kind of like a model for what social distancing should look like in workplaces and schools and things like that. And, you know, I'm trepidatious ever of using, you know, sports as some sort of like model for the rest of society. But I'm kind of like, well, if people look at this and they see how seriously these athletes are taking this and this league is taking this in order to make this happen, well, then that's probably a positive message. And that's beyond all the other sort of social justice messaging, which is also extremely valuable. But I think in terms of specifically the pandemic, there's an opportunity here for basketball, because baseball just seems to be a tire fire right now, but for basketball to serve as some kind of model.
Well, so speak to that. And to that point, Bill Littlefield, the NBA, as you well know, is a smaller league, fewer players per team. So this bubble model is uniquely suited to the NBA. Could you pull off this kind of setup in Major League Baseball with the National Football League? What do you think?
Well, as far as baseball is concerned, the early evidence is that you can't. The Marlins experience is, an example of how bad things can be and how quickly they can go bad. Not only do you have the Marlins, postponing at best several games, you have at least one team, the Nationals, saying we would very much like to avoid going to play the Marlins again. So it can't be that only the Marlins are susceptible to this disease, although they are, you know, located in Florida. I think baseball has a real problem, and I would be very surprised if they were able to pull this season off. It would surprise me.
Let me turn to someone who can talk more about that, Bill. Jessica Mendoza is in Bend, Oregon. She's an MLB baseball announcer for ESPN. Jessica, welcome to On Point. Great to have you.
Thank you. I'm glad I can represent the awesome sport of Major League Baseball that's been challenged right now.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
Well, Bill Littlefield set it up for us here. Major League Baseball began its season on July 23rd. Of course, all eyes are on the Miami Marlins. So many players, 17, I think, at last count, players and staff testing positive for coronavirus. Talk to us first about the Marlins. Is their season suspended?
It is temporarily as of now, and actually breaking news came out earlier, just honestly minutes ago, about the St. Louis Cardinals, and that's been confirmed. They have multiple positive tests as well. They have postponed their game against the Brewers later this evening, and that is huge news as well, because it's not just, I know you guys were talking about the area of Florida and being a hot spot, and that's the Marlins, and their season is postponed as of now. They're not playing their games this weekend. But as of tonight, between the Phillies, the Blue Jays, the Nationals, all of the games that have been postponed, 20% of the league will not be playing its games today. And that just is a huge exclamation point to everything we've been saying. And we are, as of today, literally at the one-week mark of Major League Baseball season starting.
Wow. Here's MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred appearing on ESPN addressing the Miami Marlins coronavirus outbreak and what it means for the 2020 season moving forward.
I don't put this in the nightmare category. I mean, obviously, we don't want any player to get exposed. It's not a positive thing, but I don't see it as a nightmare. We built the protocols to allow us to continue to play. That's why we have the expanded rosters. That's why we have the pool of additional players. And we think we can keep people safe and continue to play.
Jessica Mendoza, not a nightmare scenario, not a nightmare category problem. Really? I mean, how do you see it?
I mean, it is quickly becoming one, and I think what Major League Baseball has been trying to do is adapt, stay positive. They obviously want to continue to play. That's been clear because they did play in that. You got to remember that Miami Marlins had four positive tests as of this last Sunday morning, and they played the Philadelphia Phillies. That's where I think things really changed in my point of view of where the priority is. I appreciate that the game with the Cardinals and the Brewers has now been postponed. They learned from that. But the fact that there are now positive cases within the Phillies organization, the team that played the Marlins on Sunday, tells you that the decisions that have been made thus far have not been the right ones.
So it's interesting because the Major League Baseball protocol is incredibly comprehensive. Players must wash their hands, sanitize their hands after every half inning. If the baseball is touched by multiple players, you have to get rid of it. No spitting, no high fives, no sunflower seeds. Players can't stand shoulder to shoulder for the national anthem, and no post-game showers. I mean, the NBA has it pretty tough, too. But boy, MLB protocol is tough. And yet, we have these problems, Jessica.
Yeah, because I feel like in 113 pages, that's how long the protocol was. I mean,
right.
So 113 pages. It is incredibly thorough. But what is missing, Jane, is what do the players do when they leave the field? Because, to be honest, of all the sports that are playing right now, baseball does have the highest percentage chance of actually succeeding in this because of the natural social distancing, the fact that this sport is played outside. But the fact remains is that these players, the staff, you're talking about 30 different teams with 30 players on each team that make decisions once they leave the field to not always stay in their hotel, not do the things that you're supposed to do, because there isn't that bubble. There isn't those rules. Now, MLB did adjust this week, and they are giving every team basically a coronavirus person that will stand there and be a watchdog at the hotels to make sure that they aren't leaving. But let's be real, that's where, you know, with contact tracing, a lot of this is happening, is not on the field, but away from it.
So Jason Gay, jump in here. I hear you talking about the chaperones. I mean, does that really work?
I don't know. I mean, I would be lying to you if I had some sort of comprehensive idea of what the exact right strategy for baseball to get out of this is. But I actually, can I ask Jessica a question, which
please.
Is, could you envision a scenario where the league shuts down for, you know, 2 to 4 weeks, maybe a full month, and comes back in September and plays, whether it's in a spring training group of facilities in Florida or Arizona, or even, hey, let's do it in Omaha, how they do in college, does like a kind of a round robin World Series type tournament with all its teams and tries to do as much of an NBA bubble as possible? Because everyone seems to have bubble fever now, that seems to be the most practical way of doing this.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that was talked about, Jason, which is interesting, is back in April, they talked about having three different bubbles. And I know that sounds silly, but right now they have the three different regions. They've got the West, yeah. They have the Central, they have the East. And the conversation then was to have Arizona, Texas, and Florida be the three different, basically, bubbles for the 10 teams each, so they wouldn't be traveling. Mm. They would be there. They would play their season, which is what they're doing now, except they're traveling between all those 10 teams. And then you get to the final of the 30 teams, 16 would advance to the postseason. And from there, you could have all 16 teams essentially play in one location. That was something that I thought, honestly, was a brilliant idea then, because let's be real. With the NBA, the comparison, it's not fair to put all 30 teams into one location like NBA's doing, because there's a less amount of players. They only have 20% of their season left. But with MLB, I think three different bubble locations was a fantastic idea, but players and owners shot it down by June, and that's why we're at today.
Mm. And so right now, Jessica Mendoza, what is the plan for the season? I mean, we were hearing a 60-game season. Now what?
The plan, as of now, is for them to charge ahead. And we've already seen now 30 games postponed in just the first week of season because of positive tests. So within just that, I mean, you're looking at just, if you look at the Marlins, for example, if they even want to have any kind of season, there's no way they're going to play 60 games. I think at this point, the Major League Baseball's plan is to have a winning percentage by the end of the season. And whatever, however many games they can get in, it could be 30 games, it could be 40 games. The reality, in my opinion, no one's getting the 60 games. I mean, that just
right.
seems like a far cry at this point. So they would do a winning percentage at the end. And when I heard you guys talking about money, the money that is made in Major League Baseball isn't right now. It's in October. When the postseason hits, that's why they expanded the postseason to go from 10 teams to 16 teams. They want to get to October. That's where the real money comes in. Mm.
Jessica Mendoza, MLB baseball announcer at ESPN from Bend, Oregon. So great to talk to you, Jessica. Thank you very much, and good luck announcing those games.
Thank you. I know. I hope everyone, the decisions that are made thus forward, keep more players safe, because I'm a little worried right now. Thank you, Jane.
You stay safe too, Jessica. Thank you very much. Bill Littlefield, what did you hear there in Jessica Mendoza's assessment?
Well, I was very interested to hear that things are worse than I thought they were. I didn't realize there were that many teams involved. One consequence of the pandemic is partly because there were fewer sports to pay attention to. I've been paying less attention to sports. But that was dismaying. And I think that this season that they've tried to cobble together that is falling apart in places is going to be seen for what it is by most fans as a kind of a carnival that they hope will make some money for the corporate folks who sponsor it and the TV people at the end of the summer and the beginning of the fall. Maybe that's okay. I'm a little bit, I'm not comfortable with it, but maybe other people are. I'm a little bit uncomfortable with some of the what has been described as the protocol, because it's interesting to me that NBA players and Major League Baseball players get tested every day, and they're very closely monitored, their medical conditions and their temperatures and their symptoms and everything else. Whereas those of us out in the rest of the world, despite what the President of the United States has said, can't get tests that we get a result on in a reasonable amount of time. It may take 5, 6, 7 days to get a result. And it's preposterous that that this should be the case months and months after this pandemic has become evident. And I hope people will understand. I'd like to see some professional athletes stand up, not just take a knee, but stand up and say, hey, I got a test today and yesterday, and I'm going to get one tomorrow. And how come my mom can't get one, and my brother and my grandmother home in Duluth?
It's certainly a different standard. Bill Littlefield, Jason Gay, stick with us. Much more to get to. We're discussing sports during the pandemic as professional leagues begin trying to get back on their feet. We'll talk about the NFL, college football, and more coming up after the break. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Three decades ago, Sterling Cuneo was an angry, violent teenager facing life without parole. Today, he's a celebrated author and a peacemaker. His journey is a window into how violence is perpetuated in this country, but it's also a story about how people change.
There's no better example of a person who's prepared to be released.
And about people changing the system.
We have to reimagine what we're doing, because what we're doing isn't working.
This is Cell Blocks to Mountaintops, a podcast and video series. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, On Point listeners. I'm poet and author Shinyi Pai. As you celebrate Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month, I invite you to listen to the 10,000 Things podcast from KUOW and the NPR Network. 10,000 Things is a podcast about modern artifacts of Asian American life, ordinary objects that tell extraordinary stories and reveal something profound about the experience of being Asian in America. Find 10,000 Things from KUOW and the NPR Network, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. Next week on the program, we'll be talking with educators about schools reopening. So teachers, what's your district's plan for the new school year? How have you prepared and what tough decisions are you having to make? We'd love to hear your story at 617-353-0683. Today, we're discussing the return of professional sports during the pandemic and the highly uncertain road ahead. With us, Jason Gay, sports columnist at The Wall Street Journal, and Bill Littlefield, veteran sports commentator and former longtime host of the WBUR and NPR program Only a Game. Let's move to the NFL. The NFL is set to start its season on September 10th. Where do things stand right now with the NFL, Jason Gay?
Well, the NFL is the most... or the largest entertainment product that exists in this country in terms of sports. It is the league that all the other leagues aspire to be in terms of its wealth, in terms of its television reach. When you look at the list of the most watched television programs at the end of the year, about 95% of them are football games. Football is king in this country, so I would expect that the NFL is probably building a stadium on the moon as we speak to have some sort of contingency plan here. But football has not taken the bubble approach here. They are, you know, trying to do some kind of regional version that's akin to what baseball is doing, but football is by and large trying to be football. You're not going to see volumes of fans in the stands, and Listen, these games are going to sneak right up on us. 4 weeks is not terribly far away from us, and I don't know if it's simple as the kind of institutional swagger that football typically has. I don't think that's going to be sufficient here, as we've learned very quickly with baseball.
Well, the NFL and NFL Players Association reached a deal last week that set financial terms for players, many players who want to opt out of this season. In fact, some of the best players on the New England Patriots opted out this week. Here is Philadelphia Eagles receiver Marquise Goodwin explaining his decision to opt out of the upcoming NFL season with his wife and baby daughter by his side. He posted a video to his YouTube page.
It doesn't mean that I don't love football. It doesn't mean that I don't want to be an Eagle. It doesn't mean anything besides the fact that I'm protecting these two right here. These are my pride and joy, man. I live for these two. I die for these two.
Bill Littlefield, what do you make of the NFL season and these players, these high-profile, highly paid players that are stepping out?
Well, first of all, I think Jason is absolutely correct in his characterization of the product, and I wouldn't be surprised if they were building a whole stadium complex somewhere where it could be kept germ-free, microbe-free, and so that football could continue. When Dr. Fauci suggested that maybe it wouldn't be such a good idea to have the NFL season proceed, I think that probably had something to do with the fact that his life has been threatened and his family members have been threatened. Football is extremely important to a lot of people, and it's seen as so very central to life in this country. But you know, things have changed, and I just don't see how things can proceed as normal. It's just that sort of the most obvious evidence of that is numbers of players, as you've just said, Jane, who have decided, you know what, it's not worth it. And it's not just my wife and my child. It's, well, my mother has a disease that, you know, has made her immune system less active than it might have been. Or, you know, sometimes the players themselves have complicated medical histories and problems that the last thing they want to do is risk piling COVID-19 on top of it. And it's just it's going to be a compromised product if it goes on at all. And I just think at some point the reality of our current circumstance needs to be acknowledged.
Let's get John in here. He's a listener in Detroit, Michigan. Hi, John. Welcome to On Point.
Thank you.
Yes.
So I'm a stagehand in Detroit, and so obviously the sports affect me not as much as some of our regular guys that do it all the time there. But I just don't understand why the corporations that run these big venues aren't getting behind Dr. Fauci and saying we've got to use common sense, patience, and health. And because there's no way you're going to put 80,000 fans in Ford Field anytime soon.
So even though, John, your livelihood depends on you working as a stagehand at many of these sporting events, you say this should be a no-go. Stop.
Yes, absolutely. You know, when we do the auto show here, which is one of the largest auto shows in the nation, we all get sick. It's January. It's December and January. We're putting the auto show in, and it's our moneymaker for the year.
Yeah.
And we all get ill because all these people come from all over the planet and bring their germs. And
you can imagine what it will be like with the coronavirus. John, I get it. Thank you very much. Let's get another call in here from Dory in Horseheads, New York. Hi, Dory. You're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi. Go ahead.
Well, my comment was on baseball. And I have to say, I have been a baseball fan since I was a little girl and living just north of New York City. I was a Willie Mays fan. I'm thrilled that baseball is back.
Yeah.
But not at the cost of people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there should be some serious consequences, both to the Marlins team, the management, whoever made the decision to play, knowing people had tested positive and not informing the league. And whoever it was that went out and did whatever they did, I've heard various rumors. I don't know if it's ever been confirmed or not. Those people have put lives in danger.
Right. I mean, and there talk about serious consequences for teams who play with players who've tested positive. Jason Gay, those are two very interesting calls. I'm especially struck by John, the stagehand, not working, you know, out of a job because of the season and saying, yeah, this is enough. No go.
Yeah, just as a point of clarification, I think that the Marlins did let the league know that they had positives on their team and didn't try to hide that from baseball before it going forward. There was some controversy about the fact that they sort of decided as a team to go forward via text message, which doesn't seem like a CDC or WHO kind of protocol, but I do think the league was apprised of the situation. With regard to what John said, and I think it's, you know, he's in a business as a stagehand that is just disproportionately impacted by this, the idea of a rock concert, when are we going to see that kind of thing happening in this country again? But I keep going back to this quote, and it's a great quote by a sports columnist named Jane McManus, who teaches at Marist College also. And she talked about how sports should be the reward for a functioning society. And it's a quote that I've heard baseball players use subsequently. And it really is very astute in the respect that people are looking at what's happening in the United States and saying, like, well, they did soccer in the UK. They had the Premier League. They're playing the Bundesliga. They're playing professional tennis in some of these pockets of Europe. Why aren't we having so many problems here in the United States? And the fact of the matter is that those nations were able to get their infection rates under control. They were able to get some sort of buy-in in terms of the collective public health, kind of thing that we have not had in this country. We are not, you know, hyper-functional when it comes to treating the virus, and that's why we're in this predicament. I mean, everything that's happening in sports is a mirror of what's happening in the country.
Yeah, I love the quote that you cited. Here's Washington Nationals closer Sean Doolittle using it while talking about the challenges facing baseball, trying to resume activities in the middle of a pandemic. Here he is from last month before the season began.
We haven't done any of the things that other countries have done to bring sports back. Sports are like the reward of a functioning society, a functional society. And we're just like trying to just bring it back.
And Bill Littlefield, you know, other leagues around the world are much farther ahead of the U.S.
Yes.
I'm thinking of the Premier League for soccer. I mean, what do you say?
Well, I think Jason is absolutely right that there hasn't been what he called a buy-in by the citizens in this country. But the other big difference is that other countries have had leaders that have instituted national programs and policies that have encouraged people to buy in, and in some cases monitored the extent to which they were buying in. And that's why they've had a much better result in terms of dealing with the pandemic. We've had none.
Yeah.
We've had no national policy at all. So I couldn't agree more with the quote about sports being the reward for a functional and functioning society. And I don't think we're at that point yet. We're way short of that point vis-a-vis the COVID-19. And I think the other problem is that football especially, now Jason knows more about this than I do perhaps, but the caller said, you know, hey, there's no way there's going to be 80,000 people in the stadium. Jason, what is the arrangement that the NFL has made in terms of fans? Will there be any fans, live fans in those stadiums when the games start, or is it limited or 6 feet apart, or what's the deal?
It's just going to be you and I, Bill, you know, end zone to end zone, you know,
I get it.
Looking at each other, face paint. Okay. So get your face paint ready. Every franchise is coming up with its own plan, and they've reached out, I think in almost every case, to the season ticket holders and said, look, there's going to be no repercussion for you if you don't want to go to games this year. And there's some sort of, you know, version of half capacity or a third capacity or a quarter capacity, you know, for fans in the stands. And again, all this stuff goes back to what we've all been referring to here, which is a kind of magical thinking, which is what we're talking about in the NBA. It's an actual plan. It's a protocol. If something happens here, we do something happens B. You know, we don't just like cross our fingers and hope it all works out. And I think in baseball's plan thus far, and to a degree in what football's planning out thus far, is I don't care how long the protocols are, how many pages they are, how many, you know, prestigious medical scholars have weighed in, they are all requiring this kind of, you know, hope
that things will work out. And mm-hmm. when you get into that kind of business in a pandemic, that is a very, very tricky ask.
So I know you're both chomping at the bit to get to college football. the Big Ten, the Pac-12, they've announced they will play only conference games. The Ivy League is out altogether. Speaking of money, what are the implications if big money college football is canceled this year? Jason, you first.
Well, enormous implications, and this has really brought into sharp relief what we've been saying for now decades, which is that college sports, particularly football and men's basketball, are big, big multi-billion-dollar businesses in which the athletes are effectively unpaid employees. And when you're basically telling them, back to work, we got to make this happen, because if we don't make that money, we're in deep trouble, you're really sort of underlying the hypocrisy that has existed for a very long time. It is very strange for universities, which are currently planning to bring back fractions, 20%, 30% of students, to make them play football games. I don't get it. I get the motivation. Boy, there's nothing I enjoy more than college football on a Saturday afternoon. I would love to see my Wisconsin Badgers thrash the Michigan Wolverines. But I don't want to do it at the risk of anyone's safety.
Bill, you make the distinction between some of these larger leagues, the NFL, the MLB, NHL, that they'll be okay financially if there isn't a season this year. But contrast that to the smaller leagues with less resources, right, like the WNBA, MLS, soccer. What kind of hit will those leagues be taking if there is not a season?
Well, I think it remains to be seen what kind of hit specific leagues will take. But if you look at the WNBA, for example, it's not a moneymaker. It's a situation where the salaries are still quite low, despite the fact the league has been going for a while now. In many cases, teams are really supported by the NBA. So I can understand the motivation for their trying to keep the product going, because the worry there is the same as with any smaller business, which is, gee, if we close for a while, we may not be able to reopen. And of course, we've seen that with several manifestations of women's pro soccer, even without the complication of a worldwide pandemic.
Yeah.
I would say this. Can I just interject one quick thing, which is that both the WNBA and the National Women's Soccer League, which came back rather successfully, and MLS as well. I mean, both of them had sort of hiccups at the beginning with franchises being stopped because of outbreaks on those individual franchises. But it was an opportunity to get people to watch. I mean, everyone's starving for, stuff to watch. And I think with the Women's Soccer League, they had record ratings. And I think that mm-hmm. was a motivation there.
Hmm. So I've heard some say that this professional sports season, whether it be the NBA, the NFL, MLB, doesn't really count this year. That in some form or fashion, it's not really legitimate. And whoever wins the quote-unquote championship should have, an asterisk next to their name. Jason Gay, badge of honor this year or not? How do you see it?
Oh, listen, every column that I've written for the Wall Street Journal this year, I am submitting for a Pulitzer. So there are no asterisks this year. Everything counts. I mean, come on. We're sending this show to the Peabody Award, okay? Let's just get this thing underway. I don't believe in asterisks. I think that's silly. Stakes are stakes. Games are games.
Yeah.
We will all look back upon this as a rather bizarre environment, but the notion that somehow it doesn't count is very disrespectful to people who are actually putting something on the line.
Well, Bill Littlefield, do you agree?
Well, I think the problem is people who say that these truncated seasons or interrupted seasons don't have integrity are assuming that real seasons do have integrity. And they're forgetting such things as the steroid scandal and greenies back in the 60s and drugs in the NBA and all kinds of and steroids throughout. Football, it just, we have to take all this with a grain of salt when people talk about integrity and asterisks, I think.
I love that, we're talking about, this dystopic idea of what sports are. Bill has always lived in dystopia. You are just their permanent resident.
I love that you guys don't take yourselves too seriously. That's all.
No, oh my God. The one thing you learn over time is never take yourself, take your work seriously. Don't take yourself seriously, right?
That's right. Jason Gay, sports columnist at the Wall Street Journal. Jason, thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
Bill Littlefield, veteran sports commentator and former longtime host of the WBUR and NPR program Only a Game, an all-around wonderful guy. Bill, we miss you around here.
Jane, thank you for the opportunity. Stay well.
Thank you. You too. Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. And do have a good weekend. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes.
Can Profit Motive Save the Planet is a company that takes the climate into account a better investment. How about one that pays workers a living wage and champions transparency and board diversity? That's the idea of ESG, or environmental social governance.
Sounds like a wonderful story. You can make more money, you can save the planet at the same time. Almost no one is going to turn that down.
It's a story that Andy King of Questrom and Veet Henish of the Wharton School challenged during a recent event at Questrom. Professor King played the critic, who says these are problems for regulation to solve, not markets.
As a famous economist said to me, you can't fix externalities with the profit motive, because the profit motive is not linked to externalities. Externalities are the byproduct of pursuing profits. So you can't fix them by getting people to even look harder at profits.
Meanwhile, Veet emphasized that ESG can be an important part of the solution.
Regulation matters, and we need better regulation. And we need to reallocate trillions of dollars of capital over time to the climate transition alone, forgetting social justice, racial justice, and other ESG issues. We're going to need the profit motive for that. No government regulation is going to reallocate tens of trillions of dollars of capital alone. It's going to be investors who are looking at current government regulation and future government regulation and trying to connect the dots.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.